that when we recognize that our biggest challenges, and this is one of the biggest lessons I've learned from the podcast again and again, is that all these amazing people doing amazing things, their biggest challenges formed their biggest gifts, right? So when I'm thinking about my son and school, it's not lost on me right now that, you know, you having gone through what you felt was depressing. You couldn't express yourself fully through school, right? You couldn't express and it was depressing. It was such a large challenge for you. And it is for so many people, right? Like, I had so many things from school that I would like to rewrite, you know, it also, as from the father's perspective, from the mother's perspective, absolutely, it's like, man, we shouldn't have to go through that. As the father's perspective, I look at it as there is some beauty in it, because now I get to sit opposite Alexandra in this incredible podcast called The Unschooling Podcast. Had it not been for her challenges, she would not yield the sweet gift of her biggest challenge.
Aber die haben da also Bescheid jetzt, und dann hat es so, das war so krass, der Chef, der hat so andere Leute, nur man sieht sich halt, und dann verschwinden die Leute nacheinander. Aber guck mal, das eine bei den anderen, bei der ersten.
I love it. Yes, very welcome, Amrit Santu. I'm super, super happy that you're here with me. And I know that I say that for every guest I have on my show, but I'm a fanboy. and I'm super happy that you're here with me, because I need to say, and it's always the same. I know I was so inspired by your work, your content, your knowledge and all of that. And it helped me grow into the person I am. And I bet it helped so many others as well. So thank you so, so much for that conversation. I'm looking forward to everything that we are discovering today. Thank you so, so much.
Alexandra, I cannot tell you how much that means to me. I'm borderline emotional. Thank you so much. It's really, really my pleasure and my blessing to be here with you, and just to feel, yeah, the impact that, you know, even the work you're doing in the world, you know, even the work that I'm doing in the world, it starts with such a big heart and such a small belief at times, you know, and watching the ripples of what's possible is really humbling, and to receive, yeah, your insights and what it's meant to you really means a lot to me. Thank you.
Nice. Thank you so much. Yes, maybe tell me or us a bit about your work. I mean, I'm familiar with your work, and maybe I can read one sentence that was stuck in my head for quite some time now. Mm-hmm. There's greatness in all of us, and there is a lot more. Like, I'm not going to read it all, so I'm going to link your website definitely into the description, but there's greatness in all of us. I didn't really believe that for a long, long time, because school is teaching something very different. It's like, we are not that great, especially if we don't fit in and if we're not perfectly doing well in all of the subjects. So I didn't really believe that a long time. I started to believe it again when I got my son and I saw him being so great. And I was like, I did that. I'm great as well. Let's be great together. So when I was reading that sentence, I was like, okay, true. We are all like so unique, and we are all our little souls here on this planet, and we have a purpose. And I think your work is just reflecting that a lot, and I love it. Maybe you want to describe, because I think you're way better in describing what you're doing than me. I could never put it in perfect words. So here you go, please.
Touch wood, your words are perfect. It's, yeah, thank you. It's when I start on the coaching journey with most of my clients, the first sort of cornerstone piece that I like to sort of lay down as a bit of a foundation rock, not even a bit really, as the foundation rock between in the container that we set up for coaching, is we are the universe looking in on ourselves. And if we can get on board with that idea, you and I are a really good coachee. It's a coaching coachee fit, but it's way deeper than that. Like, I think coaching gives it a container, in my humble opinion, but really I'm just your brother walking by your side for a period of time that you choose to be walking, you know, together on this incredibly sacred path that is life. So yeah, it's once we come to terms with the fact that we are the universe looking in on ourselves, it is a great mystery. You know, in all the mystical schools, they've called it this great mystery. And it is really, and I don't just mean great in terms of, oh, how fantastic, you know, great really in this honoring, even in the mess, even in, you know, there's great sadness, there's great joy, there's a lot that comes under the word great. Yeah. And I think there is that greatness in all of us because we are the universe looking in on ourselves, and the universe is, it's a great mystery. It's incredible. And we are an incarnate, a small little piece. I don't know if this translates, but I often look at it as if I was looking out of the eyes of a bee, and it has all those little hexagonal sort of lenses, but like thousands of them. And we're all this little, one small little hexagonal piece of the lens looking out in the universe at our own little way. And the universe is just so curious looking out at itself, at its own greatness. And it's such a trip that this is the miracle of consciousness, and yet we're participating in it. So yeah, ergo, if the universe is great, then we're great too, right? Because we're it.
True. I like it a lot, really, because I think I didn't meet so many people when I was younger that were really like, yeah, live your purpose, or this has a greater purpose. Because especially in Germany and where I grew up, a lot of people were like, okay, you need to go to school, you need to study, you need to work, it's 9 to 5, this is how it is. And when you retire, maybe you can travel a bit and these kind of things. And I always had this strong feeling like, no, I don't really believe that. I think this doesn't apply to me. I'm very sorry, but I'm going to do differently. And I don't care if you all hate me, but I do need to change that. I can't, because it made me so angry to see that, because I saw that they're so unhappy and they proposed that unhappiness on me. And I was like, no, I can't do that. And they all told me I'm crazy for believing that everyone is special and that I think I'm special as well. And I was like, no, you can't say that. I'm like, I just did it. And I think when I got my son, I was very conscious about what I tell him, like what he has to do and what kind of connection he has to whatever spiritual idea he has. So I was always like, I'm meditating, I'm doing this, I think it's working like that. And we've been to a lot of monasteries, is the right word? Like we visited monks. Monasteries. Yeah, yeah, we visited monks in the jungle in Thailand. And I think this was one of the most, one of the most beautiful encounters, maybe, because there was such a peaceful vibe somehow. And it was all about meditating and being in the jungle. And there was a lot of monkeys and nothing else, really. And he was maybe like 2 years old, and he was just sitting and meditating with these monks. And I was just crying, like, oh my God, this is so cute. Mm-hmm. And I think he got it. He really understood, because he wanted to go back all the time. And he still remembers. And I didn't take pictures. Of course, I didn't take pictures. But this feeling, he grew up with this feeling of connecting. And it was all about connecting. And we talk a lot about a purpose of life, of my life, of his life. And latestly, we have been talking a lot about, you have to discover it on your own. There's nobody, you can't copy. You can't copy paste nothing in life. You can't do it. You can get inspired, but you just have to, you can have this inspiration, but you need to walk your path by yourself. And I need to say, school robbed me of walking my path a lot. Because I needed to walk the path that everyone else was walking. And my son doesn't go to school, so he doesn't have to walk anyone's path but his own path. And I always felt guilty, like, oh my God, he has no boundaries. He has no nothing he can, like, rely to. But this is completely wrong, because I've been talking to him. We have been on a little vacation, let's say like that, on Lanzarote, and we just took some time to really bond, not on purpose, but it just came up, and we were just lying on the beach in the sun. And then we talked a lot about that how safe he feels and how secure he feels that he can do whatever the fuck he wants. And that he has some kind of coach by his side, his mom, that is not, that is supporting him in this. Do whatever the fuck you want. If you want to meditate, if you want to play soccer, I'm here. We're going to do it all together. And I feel when I consumed your content, I felt like you have been, I mean, I was not actively coached by you, but I felt like you got my back. You were like, your content was like my little coach, like telling me you can do it. Everyone has to do it their own way and it's fine. Just do it. Mm-hmm. And I think school is, for me at least, a big portion of why people suffer. Because I think they lose this spark. They just don't feel their soul anymore. And I don't think it's crazy at all or weird to believe that we are soul beings and that we're here for a reason. Because this is basically the only truth I genuinely feel in my life, that we have all, each one of us has a unique purpose, and we're here to discover it and to just fulfill that purpose. And I feel like your content told me that, like, yes, do it, yes, go on, you got that. I love that a lot. Tell me more. How do you think can parents support their kids, no matter if they go to school or whatever? And you're a father yourself. I mean, you got the feeling of coaching your little one in terms of, yeah, find your life purpose, go on.
Yeah, it's really intriguing because let's talk about the parenting dynamic for a sec to really ground in the different roles, because I'm going to look at this very different potentially to how you look at it specifically. And I know some people will be like, oh, gender, don't do that. But there's a thing in there. So I notice with my wife, she is Mama Lion Bear. Yeah. So she is the mother lion. And for her, it is purely no one gets to. Like my son, you know, she is just protective, super protective, and not to a fault, but that is her role, right? Nurture. That is her love. She is nurture. And as the father lion bear, right, my role is, hey, try that. You can do it. Hey, try this. You can do this. Hey, climb up here. Hey, go explore this. Hey, let's go explore this together. No, go on your own. It's just darkness. It's not that scary. Off you go. And so the mother's role is to provide this nest and to protect the baby from the world, right? It's this nurturing big cuddle, because the mother knows that the world is a big place. Yeah, there's a lot out there that can get in, that can harm the baby potentially, right? And so she wants to protect. And it's interesting because it's in somewhat of a juxtaposition to the father's role. And I'm not saying mums and dads exclusively play this role. I'm sure in relationships this gets switched. But my role as a father is, hey, it is a big bad world out there. And, you know, one day mum and I unfortunately aren't going to be here. And you're going to be carving your own path. And if I keep you insulated, you're not going to learn the skills that you need to learn to navigate this world on your own. That's Papa Father Lion there, yeah? And so the mum is in this, and you see it in stereotypical, you know, kid is a teenager, wants to go out, and then dad's like, let him go. And mum's like, please stay home. It's like the stereotypes are there for a reason, right? So the way I look at this is obviously going to be slightly different to how you look at it. For me, as the father, I somewhat acknowledge that, yeah, there is so much, and, you know, my own journey tells me this, and, you know, it's probably worth mentioning, is one of my biggest challenges was the 6 years of depression that I struggled with, yeah. And going through that, one of the biggest lessons that I learned, which brought me to expression of purpose, learning to express my life fully with the whole, what is life even wanting to express through Amrit, we can argue that that is purpose. Even coming to grips with that, learning to even just peek under the hood, oh, I've got something to say, express. I say now jokingly, and not even that jokingly, that the inspired evolution is a big part of my mental health strategy, right? The inspired evolution is part of me looking after myself because it allows me to express fully. But one of the key things in there is that when we recognize that our biggest challenges, and this is one of the biggest lessons I've learned from the podcast again and again, is that all these amazing people doing amazing things, their biggest challenges formed their biggest gifts, right? So when I'm thinking about my son and school, it's not lost on me right now that, you know, you having gone through what you felt was depressing. You couldn't express yourself fully through school, right? You couldn't express and it was depressing. It was such a large challenge for you. And it is for so many people, right? Like, I had so many things from school that I would like to rewrite, you know, that, yeah, it also, as from the father's perspective, from the mother's perspective, absolutely, it's like, man, we shouldn't have to go through that. As the father's perspective, I look at it as there is some beauty in it, because now I get to sit opposite Alexandra in this incredible podcast called The Unschooling Podcast. Had it not been for her challenges, she would not yield the sweet gift of her biggest challenge. My biggest challenge was 6 years of depression, and that yielded, you know, a whole practice around mindfulness and meditation that literally reconstituted my mental state, my emotional state, my physical well-being, everything. Mindful living is everything I don't want to say preach, but probably preach, yeah, preach and espouse. And then my other biggest challenge was living out of alignment for my career for 7 years, right? And then that brought me to career alignment, which is fundamentally, again, purposeful living, living in alignment to what it is you're here to do. So from the father's perspective, it's hard to demonize the challenges because we see them as necessary friction for growth. And yeah, that doesn't mean that I'm a massive advocate for the schooling system, the way that it's set up. It doesn't mean that I'm against it as well. I think there are some really amazing things, you know, the way we learn to, even just thinking about young nervous systems co-regulating amongst each other in a communal space is so beautiful. But then, yeah, like you said, there are bits of us that are waiting and yearning to be expressed. That, you know, the model for creating more factory workers doesn't really support. Mm.
True. Yes, nice. I think when I was reading about you, and I really liked one expression, soul-sucking jobs, because this is how I felt for a long time. And for sure, yeah. For sure, I felt that. And I've just started working maybe 6 years ago, so it wasn't that long at all. So, and I need to say I'm a digital nomad. I can travel wherever I want, and I was very lucky that I could just pick the jobs I wanted to do. And but I need to say that I see a lot of my friends really struggling with their jobs, and that they are really having this weight of going to work every morning, and I could just lay in my bed like, today I have a recording. I'm so fucking grateful and happy and lucky. But I need to say that it was a long way, and it didn't came from nowhere. So it wasn't like, God is sending me this gift of the podcast. No, it wasn't like that. And I really felt that because, of course, I had this strong core of I'm not going to repeat what my parents did, because I saw them struggling and being unhappy. So for me, it was very clear, like, this has to fit. And if I feel like a job is not fitting my purpose, if it's not nurturing my soul, I need to let it go. Doesn't matter the money. I can't do it. I just can't do it. It's a no-go for me. I physically can't do it. I had one job that it was so bad at one point, I couldn't open the laptop anymore. I was just like, okay, it's over. It's over. I can't do it. And I think sometimes I see people are being so used to go through stuff a long time. And you said it yourself, like you went through a period of soul-sucking jobs for a long period of time. I think we got used to it, and maybe sometimes we don't see that there is an alternative. We can do it. And maybe there's even fear of doing it differently. And I just see in a lot of unschooled kids, they don't give a shit. They just have their own purpose. They have their own path, because they don't have this daily routine, this daily, you have to be like that, you have to do it like that. And I don't say that there are no great schools out there. There are definitely wonderful schools out there. They're nurturing the kids and everything. So I don't, if I say schools, I just mean the shitty ones, not the great ones, of course. So I think we are used to this misalignment in life. So we have this, okay, we have to feel like that. It's supposed to feel like that. And I don't believe that. And I would love to hear about what you think. How can we support each other, our kids, ourselves, to be more in alignment with what we do? Because I think a lot of people have fears about money, finance, whatever comes up, society.
Having dedicated so much of my time to this, purposeful living, there are so many access points. One of the most incredible ones that I'm witnessing even in this conversation, though, is, you know, you describing what you just shared was, hey, like, I don't do what doesn't really align and serve me. Alignment is honestly one of my favorite words. Like, I'm obsessed with that word. Because it goes through on every level. Like, it's profound in every way for me. And I can see you nodding, so it is for you as well. One of the key things, as you mentioned, that, you know, certain points you're aligned, certain points you weren't aligned, even the listener tuning in, beloved audience member, you can probably highlight and notice that, and maybe it's worth asking you the question, Alexandra, like, what did it take some courage to turn things down when they weren't in alignment?
I would say for me, no, because I don't have this plan A, plan B. I just can't do it. It's like eating something that I'm not supposed to eat. But I feel like I'm a bit different than a lot of people I know, because some people are like, I have to eat it. No, you don't. Don't do it. Just skip it.
Okay, I love that. One of the things that I think most people feel in that space is fear, because it takes a little bit of courage to turn something down, because it's what we're told is good for us. And this is what the schooling is, right? It's an indoctrination. Yeah, this is what's good for you. For me, it was good to be an engineer or a doctor or a lawyer or whatever it is that I was meant to be. Yeah, it was like, hey, this is the story. This is what is success. It's mapped out for me. And I think at this juncture, now that I've mentioned the word success for the first time, it's really good to iron out that success and fulfillment are two very different things. Yeah, success is an outwardly projected, you know, it's kind of like prestige. Prestige is not something I can actually hold on to. It lives in the heads of everybody else, you know. Prestige, it's wispy, it's not tangible. Luxury is, you know, it's luxury. Prestige, it's not tangible. Success is similar, I feel, because you find, again, people achieve success and then it's like, oh, it didn't quite taste what I thought it would taste like, I need to look for the next thing. And they achieve that, and then it's like, oh, didn't quite taste what I hoped it tasted like, I'll go for the next thing. That if I get this, then I feel that. This ifing and thening, they continuously do this. I've done it. I say they. I've done it plenty, right? Thinking that, you know, eventually if I put the right thing in the ifs part of the statement, then the then part of the statement will equal happiness, right? I'll really get to the then happiness and then success and then fulfilled. But fulfillment and success, two very different things. Fulfillment is the space of meaning. It's the space of purpose. And honestly, that comes down to the little moments of you lying on the beach with your son, talking. That's fulfilling, right? You look back and, you know, touch wood, if your life does flash before your eyes in that moment, we all go. Those are the moments that will flash, you know, not the points where you're out, you know, stressing, trying to earn a dollar, trying to, you know, do whatever it is on the PC. Like, there's, you know, so success and fulfillment, two very, very different paths to tread down. To wind it back to the point was, there's courage that's required to do something that is so heavily indoctrinated into us. And why does that require courage? That is one of my early fascinations on this path, Inspired Evolution, because it required courage of me to step into being inspired to evolve. Like, I saw so many people that I was inspired by, and I was like, I want to evolve into being that, but why, what is this resistance? And I was like, there is a fear. What is the fear that is keeping me in place? And it's like, oh, conformity. There's this deep, deep, deep call to conformity in society, right? And it, like, you know, it's given, we're a tribal species, right? We grew up very tribal. Yeah. And so it's part of ours, like our anatomy is made in such a way that it goes, you know, literally amygdala deep, where it's like, if I disrupt the status quo in my tribe, I will get kicked out. And even if, like, I can imagine in ceremonial ritual style sort of living, if I died within my tribe, at least my children, my offspring are looked after by the tribe. Yeah. My legacy lives on. My DNA, my genes live on. Yeah. And I will be honored. I will be memorialized. Even if I have to die, what a beautiful way to die. Yeah. But if I was ostracized and kicked out, what does that mean for my progeny? What does that mean for me? No last rites, no rituals, the fear of literally the complete unknown of the savannah, or, you know, what's beyond the horizon. I have no idea. Yeah. So this innate sort of communal living thing that is the human species, like connection is my highest value. Yeah. We're all designed to connect. And yet that's been hijacked in such a way to say, hey, conform to the model. And the capitalistic model, you know, many philosophers have tried to come up with different ways of living. One of my favorite quotes on the matter is that, you know, it's not great. It's just the best we have right now. Right. True. And that brings me in a really good place, because I don't want to demonize it. There's many benefits of, and some of the podcasts that you've listened to on the Inspired Evolution, conscious capitalism, where people are doing like investment philanthropy. It's like, you know, they don't have shareholders. They've got charities, which they donate all of their profits to. There's so many cool things that can happen if we switch our consciousness onto trying to do something positive with it. But yeah, therein lies this real rub, which is I find we are consistently conforming. And it's an innate need to feel love, to feel connected. But we also have a need for, you know, expressing ourselves fully. And if we're consistently conforming, we're at odds with, you know, being able to fully express ourselves. And that expression, again, the opposite of that is depression, and we depress and we sort of press our true inner self in to sort of fit a mold that society would like for us. And it's usually at around about this juncture that, you know, I end up quoting The Matrix. It's honestly one of my favorite movies of all time. And yeah, because I you mentioned how I felt, you know, the word soul sucking is where this question started. And I remember going to work and it felt literally like where Morpheus takes Neo back to the Machine City, and Neo's been unplugged, but Morpheus is taking him into the real year, not the year as what he's perceived it when he was plugged into the Matrix, into reality, real time. And he shows him the world. I think it's New York City. I'm not 100% sure. Don't know America that well. And he shows the sky has been blackened, and Neo's looking at this and going, what is this? You know, and he's loosely alluding to the fact, is this the future? And Morpheus goes, no, this is actually present time reality. This is what the world looks like. However, and believe it or not, it's actually the humans that scorched the sky into darkness, because the machines were getting to such a point where, you know, they were dry, and we like they were just taking over. And we believe that if we stop solar energy being able to come through to the earth, the life force, the source of energy to this planet would subside, and then therefore the machines wouldn't be able to thrive. And the machines in their infinite wisdom realize that actually that is true, but human beings are a great source of energy. And they are able to thrive. And so they grow them in these fields, and you look and he literally shows these fields of massive, massive, massive amount of pods, of just red pods of human beings in these amniotic fluids. They're adults in growing in these fields like corn grows, right? And human beings are now grown for their energy and harvested by the machines. Again, you know, loosely correlated to the corporate machine, right? And in there, they're plugged in the back of their heads, and there's a movie playing in their minds, which is placating them, which is letting them believe that they're living into a reality, which is the Matrix, which is actually not real, right? And that's the Matrix, and then there's the real world. So that sort of relationship with the machine, growing humans, harvesting them for their energies, it's a potent metaphor, and it's very demonizing of the corporate machine. touch wood, but it really is, describes how I felt when I was in misalignment, you know. And I'm so grateful for just being able to articulate it so clearly for people because of what I experienced and the pain that, you know, touch wood, that I felt. It just, and, you know, I have to acknowledge that, again, corporate capitalism, not necessarily as evil as I felt it was at the time as well. There are definitely positive sides to it, and I've seen entrepreneurs create amazing things, which is what I showcase on the Inspired Evolution podcast, right? So there are positives to it. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, being project management construction the way that I did it. It was wrong for Amrit. Yeah, I was out of alignment, that holy word again. Yeah, it wasn't part of my alignment. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And again, to circle a few of our conversations together, as the father in me looking back in on me, it was perfect because I don't look back at that time with angst now. I look back at it and I go, I'm so grateful for it because I know my biggest challenges equal my biggest gift. Yeah. If it wasn't for that period, that I wouldn't be here having this conversation with you as somewhat of now an authority, touch wood, having podcasted over however many people, 350 plus, and coached over 260 people now deeply one-on-one on this journey of finding their purpose. I know a little bit about it, and I know that my biggest challenge is my biggest gift. So I'm grateful for the challenge that I went through. But at the time, oh man, yeah, soul-sucking, touch wood, which I hate using the word.
Love
because
it.
Because it's all sacred, I don't want anybody to suck it up. Fuck that. Touch wood. But yeah, it's really how it felt.
I love that. Yeah, I've been watching The Matrix with my kid as well, I think in December or January, something like that. And I thought maybe it's too crazy to show him because he's 10, but he loved it and he got it. And he was like, this is somehow more documentary style. Of course, he wasn't like, this is one-to-one. But he saw the parallels and he was combining a lot about what he learned in the movie with how the world is right now. And he even was talking about, okay, or we were talking about what is going to happen with AI, singularity, and the sun, and all these things as well. But I think the most interesting part is that he was talking a lot about, okay, he knows how to lucid dream. That's normal for a kid, nothing special, I think. But he was like, okay, there is another world, there is another this and that. And he was trying to combine all these different levels of consciousness and soul, I don't know how to call it, like world layers, maybe, let's call it layers of being or of existence, maybe. And I think this is just crazy because in school I heard nothing about that. And this is the first time I actually talked to someone so, yeah, deeply about that topic, about where your soul is located and what kind of layers this world has and how many. Yeah, this was just so deep that I really found watching The Matrix with your kid is just unique. You have to do it. It's just eye-opening, for sure. I love that movie.
I can't wait. Yeah.
It's lovely because they just have a different approach to. They are not so, yeah, I think they don't have these many expectations and experiences, so they are so open-minded. They're like, just sucking all this information in. Yes, and another topic maybe that we could touch base on is fear and how to conquer it, because this is also something I've been talking to my son in the last couple of weeks, because I've been like, okay, let's move to Lanzarote. I want to move there. It's so beautiful there. I mean, I love the island where we live, but let's move to Lanzarote. The energy is just different. I love it. He was like, nah, he's going to miss his friends and these kind of things. So I do get it. And then he was like, what if he's just afraid of doing it and he doesn't really have to stay here where we are? So it's just something he needs to go through. And how does he know if this is something he needs to conquer or if this is a real reason not to do something? And I was like, this is just a feeling. Sometimes it's a process. And then you someday the door is right in front of you and then you walk through or you leave it closed, whatever you choose to do. And maybe you can talk a bit about how to conquer your fears, because I think this is a huge part of going forward and living a purposeful life. And if you hear purpose calling, sometimes it can be very scary.
Yeah. In fact, I would say a big part of why we don't listen is because how tremendous our purpose really is, how great it is. And it's like, oh, this is, it might be too much work.
That's true.
You know, and I, yeah, it, no one's purpose is, you know, oh, just open that can. You know, the purpose is always, you know, help spread light, or, you know, expand consciousness, or, you know, heal people, or, you know, inspire others, or, you know, there's always a service involved, but it's always a scale, I've noticed, involved. And it doesn't have to always be that more is better. Also, depth is huge, you know, for a lot of people, I actually end up coaching a lot of mothers. And for them, it's, you know, their family is such a big, huge part of just mama bear thing is a thing, you know, and they're just, you know, they've got four kids and they're just like, this is me, you know, and it's, yeah, it's huge. So purpose comes in many different forms. The big piece in there, your fear question, has so many responses to it again, right? And my response, that is my go-to response, because it's the most effective, is people's least favorite one to hear. But I'm going to stick by my guns, yeah? So the key thing about dissolving fear is, and I'll give it to you in a little bit of story, so it's a little bit more palatable, right? There's a tribe lives at the bottom of the mountain, yeah? And their church, their place of worship, their temple is at the top of the mountain. And every year, especially, they go up regularly to the top of the mountain to pray, but then every year there's like a festival and they go up to the mountain to pray. And the mountain over time, you know, slightly gets more and more treacherous, you know, adverse wind effects, whatever. And so one year they go to climb up the mountain and they meet this big black smog. And they look at the smog and they're like, and they just come back down and they don't get to pray that year for the festival. Let's call it the Festival of the Harvest. I don't know if I'm paraphrasing it correctly. Let's just call it that. And so every year for the Festival of Harvest, they go up. And ever since that time, they go up, they meet this black smog and they come back down. They haven't prayed for years now, right? To the point where eventually they, you know, they speak to the chief and they say, look, when, like, most of the tribe is not feeling good about the fact that we can't go pray for the harvest, you know, maybe something's happened to the harvest, you know, et cetera, et cetera. We're just not feeling really good. Can we as a community go to, you know, investigate, navigate how we do this? They all go up, climb the mountain. I'm accelerating the story quite rapidly, but nonetheless, they climb the mountain. And Chief is confronted by the smog. And again, everybody sees this dark, heavy smog and they're, you know, intimidated by it. And they're like, shit, everybody goes to run away immediately as they normally do. Chief, being a warrior, takes a little step forward, just a little one. Yeah, doesn't run back like everybody, a little step forward. And he noticed, just through to his subtle awareness, that the smog actually retracted just a little bit. And he became curious. So he said, hey, maybe I take another little step. And everybody that was running away stopped, turned around, looked at him, was like, what's going on? And he started to step just slowly, bit by bit by bit, forward and forward into the smog, noticing that the smog would retract every time he took a step. Eventually, he got more and more emboldened, started taking larger steps, starts getting a bit carried away, starts running up the mountain to the point where the smog eventually turns into a small little black ball. And that's all that's left of this smog that was encompassing the entire mountain. And he has a conversation with the smog and goes, what are you? And the smog turns around and goes, oh, nothing but your fear. So I love that story because there is so much in that acronym, fear is false evidence appearing real. I have to espouse that the biggest transformations that have happened for me and all of the coaching clients that I've supported is we fear set. We look at your fears. This is a concept, you know, stoic concept, but widely established by Tim Ferriss, shared with the world. What are your biggest fears? And then can we take a little small, tiny little step? And sometimes a step isn't even a massive, like it's literally, can we just journal about it? Can we just record a video on how this fear makes you feel? Yeah, just like not for the world, just for you to personally interface with. Yeah. Tiniest small little step. And you take the step and it's, oh, you know, it wasn't that bad. Me giving voice to it, you know, me putting myself out there wasn't that big a deal. So my advice for fear is feel it. You have to feel it and move towards it. And that is the definition of courage. Yeah. I, for a long time, thought fearlessness and courage were the same thing, and they're not. Yeah, fearlessness is absolutely not having fear, and I honestly thought that fearlessness and courage, yeah, were the same thing. But courage is absolutely having fear and doing it anyway. So fear, like fear, is a prerequisite for courageous living. Yeah, and to add just a little bit of like support. So that's like an emotional thing. Like you're going to have to find the courage to take a little bit of action. Don't take off more than you can chew, which is why coaching helps. It's like, hey, what's a good size chunk for me to bite? You know, your son's got you, you know, and taking trips to go visit and explore is great. Maybe you can go stay for a couple of months, you know, see how that goes. And one of the big things I find with people when they're facing decisions, there's also fear around decision-making. Yeah, now this gets practically into some of the mindset stuff around coaching, which is really useful to identify that there are type one decisions and there are type two decisions. Yeah. So the type of decision that you're making, which is moving, it feels very type two. Type two is a type of decision that you can't come back from. Type one is a decision that you can come back from. But oftentimes I feel like we mistake a lot of type one decisions as type two decisions. The reason we do that is because they feel type two, they feel life altering. And type two decisions are always life altering. Your choice to have your son. Once he came out, he's here. There's no sending him back to his maker. There's, you know, he's here, he's in the world. Hello, how you doing? That's type two decision, yeah? So those decisions definitely deserve you contemplating, taking your time. Take your time to make those type two decisions. Type one decisions, I'm sorry to say, stop giving them so much time. It seems like if I move cities, if I move islands, if I move countries, if I move locations, it's a type two decision. My life will be so different on the other side, almost like I gave birth. It feels like that, but I'm sorry, it's not. If you go for 3 months and you decide this is shit, you come back. It's a type one decision. You can walk back through the door. Yeah? So if it's a type one decision, fuck it, do it anyway. Try it on for size. Yeah, it's type one. You can, and being able to identify that is really, really important, because then it brings the fear. It turns the smog into the ball, right? You're able to identify, actually, should I be afraid? Like, is this something that really will change my, like, you know, I can't come back from? But actually, it's like, no, actually, the amount of fear, this is super false evidence appearing real, because it's a small thing in the grand scheme of, you know, 85, 90 years of living. Me taking 3 months to experiment how I live over there is cool experiment. Let's just see what happens. Now I can contextualize it a little bit better. I can take a little step, go explore, come back, see how it was. Maybe I go. I love it. I stay. Yay.
True. But I think my son knows that this is a type two decision, because this will lead us to South America into the jungle. He knows it. He knows it. So this is why he's like,
he believes that, right? But it's not definitely a type two decision, because you can always come back. Yeah, it is a type one. And that's what I mean. It looks like a type two, but it is a type one. And so reminding yourself of that, that you can always walk back. Like, I find that with so many people taking on degrees, they're like, university, should I go? And it's like, 4 years sounds like a massive commitment. Absolutely. But 6 months and $6,000 worth of debt, you can make $6,000 back. And six months to sort of dip your toes in the water, and again, a 90-year life is nothing. At least now you know. And A lot of people, I find, are looking for clarity to take action. It's one of the biggest misnomers of coaching. Yeah. People are looking for clarity to take action. Oh, let me just figure this out in my head to be able to, but honestly, it doesn't work. You'll be, how many people are clear, like are clear on, like been waiting for clarity, I should say, in listening to this podcast right now, maybe even the example of a podcast, waiting for clarity to start a podcast. I want to get clear what my podcast is about, then I'll start a podcast. I see it all the time. I wasn't really clear. It was a mess. I'm sure it was the same for you. It was a complete mess. You were just like putting one foot in front of the other and you got clear.
I still don't have no clue.
And you get clear as you go. Take the action. Clarity comes from the action, not before the action.
True. I like that a lot, actually, because I've been asked a lot the last couple of weeks, like, what if I take my kids out of school and start unschooling? And I'm always like, you can always send them back. Like, they don't close the doors forever. It's just like, you try something out. And I bet with this kind of experience, you're going to see your past experience way different, and you're going to value that option way differently. Because sometimes, at least for me, that was true. I changed something in my life, and I thought, oh, what if I can't go back? Then I realized I don't even want to go back. So why did I even thought about it in the first place? Doesn't make sense. Because with every decision you take, you grow and something else needs to leave your life. And that's perfectly fine. So for everyone who's thinking about unschooling and is like, oh, what if I can't go back? You always can go back. There are millions of schools on this planet that have open doors for every kid. And I think the more we experience, the greater we feel about our opportunities, and even we discover more opportunities and more this, more that, more this. At least this is true for me, because every time we went on a journey, it was like, oh, we could visit that country, this country, we could stay a bit longer. So
yeah, there's a point I want to throw in there, Alexandra, if I may, because one of my mentors, she passed away. Love her so much, though, touch wood. Because you can get indoctrinated into unschooling as well, yeah? Mm-hmm. And feel like, I have to buck the trend, I have to unschool. And her children were completely unschooled. And then she had this real confrontation with herself when, you know, her son turned the age of high school and he was like, I'm going to high school. And he made the decision for himself. And she was like, we don't go to school around here. and then she had the realization. She's like, that is so the antithesis of unschooling. Like, he is now choosing to go to school. And unschooling is unschooling ourselves to what we think everything should look like. So I was like, dude, of course, off you go. You know, and if you want to come out, you let me know. We pull you out. You want to go? We try our best, find the resources, we send you. And I think that was, yeah, she was an incredible mentor, touch wood. Still is, even though she's passed on. I don't know how to describe that, but well. Yeah, we're talking about it still. So this is how.
I get that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I get that. I like it because actually my grandpa passed away a couple of years ago, and I still think he's coaching me, and I still hear his voice, and it's different than hearing or talking to myself about him or addressing him in my head. It's different because I think if he's communicating with me, it's just a different kind of communication than what I could imagine it being like. So I really feel you if you say like the coaching is still going on, your mentorship is going on. It is possible. And I like it a lot because that shows how deep we are bonded with someone. And that's a great gift. I can't lie. First time is scary. But then it's like, okay, usual business. Man in the sky talking to me. Oh, I like it, actually. I like it, actually. Awesome. And I love that you say you can be indoctrinated by unschooling as well, because I see that in some unschooling parents, like, my kid is never going to go to school. I'm the same, but I don't feel like I'm forbidding anything. Like, if you want to go, you go. I'm going to drive you. I don't. Because unschooling for me is finding your own way. And not school is finding your way, but you are finding your way, your path, whatever. So I like that a lot. And There are so many different schools out there, so many different forms of schooling, education, whatever. And mix it up. I think what most people tend to do is they decide for one thing and they need to follow through. And that is just not true, because I think even if your kid skips school for a year, tries another school, you go to another country, another school, this is still a nice experience. And I think that's way more valuable than staying in one place and feeling stuck. So this fluid, this motion, just do it and just allow yourself to experience that as well, because we don't have to be stuck in one place with one school, with one idea or whatever. We are here to evolve and I think to reinvent ourselves over and over again, our ideas. So yes, unschooling for me, and I hope for a lot of parents out there, should be like, we are doing whatever feels right in that moment and we're not stuck to any kind of label or anything like that, because world is changing fast and we should be doing the same, I think. So we're at the end of this episode. I'm super happy. I learned tons. And thank you so much. And I hope everyone who is listening as well. Thank you so, so much for being on my show.
Alexandra, thank you so much for having me. It is such a pleasure to have been here and share time and space. And yeah, just really, yeah, I love what you're doing with this podcast and such a blessing to connect with the tribe and the audience here. As a parting sort of thing, can I ask you one question?
Yes, for sure.
Is that okay? I know, yes. It's a bit odd. It's your podcast.
I can't. No, myself. Go on.
We've talked a lot about the challenges, but there's a real beauty that I see in unschooling, which is, I think a lot of us adopt school because, again, the fear and where the conformity comes in. And I think for a lot of people tuning into your work, one of the most beautiful parts of embracing unschooling is, yes, bucking the fear, but on the other side of that is really this trust.
Yes.
In life.
Yes.
And not in the system, but actually in life, that we can grow organically as beings outside of an indoctrinated system. So the question from me to you is your thoughts. Yeah, I'd really love to get your thoughts on your trust in life. Yeah, and just, was it something you cultivated? Was it something that was always present? How does trust in life show up for you?
That is a good question, to be honest. I think I always had this strong feeling of what I don't want to do, but I didn't know what maybe I want to do instead. But I had this strong urge. It was more like something was pulling me into a direction and I could not trust it because I knew it was greater than me. And sometimes when really terrible things happened to me and it was like, how am I going to survive that? There was a voice in my head. It wasn't my voice. That was, no, it's for the greater good. You're going to be okay. You know, and since I heard that voice so clearly and I could distinguish between this is my thoughts, this is my thought being watched by myself or whatever, and this is something else. So I had this, there was someone caring for me. So I was like, I cannot not trust, because it turned out to be so fucking true. For example, when I made this decision, I need to leave Germany. I am not okay with the school system here. We had a look at so many schools, over 30 schools, and I was crying so badly. I was just sitting on my couch like, oh my, no, I have to leave this country. Oh no, I don't want to leave this country. And then this voice came like, oh, come on, suck it up. It's going to be the best thing ever. And I was like, okay, I'm packing my bags. I'm packing my bags. And since then, I think this was 2018, something around that. Since then, that day, I had this full trust. And before it was like, okay, I'm going to trust it. There is like 80% chance this is working out. But since I heard that voice and it really turned out great, and I had this feeling of trust in me. So I didn't have to develop it. It was just there. Somehow I had it. And I hope that there are a lot of parents out there still having this feeling like, yes, we're going to do it. No matter what society is expecting of us, we're going to do it like how we should live our lives and not society is telling us to do, because life is really beautiful, and we have so many different facets that we could discover, experience, and we just have to, we all have this trust, I think, and this voice and this guidance, even if it's ourselves from somewhere else, I don't know, but we all have this, we just need to rediscover it. And I hope that a lot of parents will rediscover it through listening to other people talking about it. I really hope that.
Yeah. And honestly, for those tuning in, thank you so much for your beautiful response, Sister Beth. Honestly, that deep inner knowing is just one of my deepest fascinations.
Yes.
Like, and it's purpose calling, it's intuition, it's your life force, it's the flow, it's, there's a call. We can all hear it. We've all heard it. We deny it frequently, but we've all heard it. Yeah. Yes. I think that's a great place to end it. Thank you so much for having me on
thank
today,
you so
man.
Much.
I'm so grateful. Edgewood, thank
Same
you.
Same for me. Thank you so much. Nice. Awesome. That was really...
Kein Punkt.